Hi, True Crime Army. Are you tired of hearing the same cases on all of your favorite podcasts? Well, you should check out Murder, She Told. Murder, She Told is an award-winning podcast which focuses on lesser-known true crime cases that will leave you wanting more. Murder, She Told is created by victims advocate Kristen Seavey, where she dives into cold cases and mysteries from New England and beyond. The show uses detailed and investigative storytelling, weaving in original interviews with the people closest to the case. Murder, She Told is rooted in deep research, straightforward narratives, and the victims and their families at the center of every story. I'm going to be playing a clip from a special episode of Murder, She Told about the bizarre 1983 disappearance of Reeves Johnson from Kittery, Maine, a case that the host, Kristen, is no kidding, investigating side by side with the detective. Learn more at murdershetold.com. and binge Murder, She Told wherever you're listening to this podcast right now.
Kittery PD had previously called up Donnelly Manufacturing and asked them to hold on to Reeves' final paycheck and to ask anyone looking for it to come in person to pick it up. But when Barbara called Donnelly to ask about it, they told her that Reeves had called and that he requested that the check be mailed to his post office box in Kittery. And despite the request of law enforcement, the check was in the mail. Either the person on the phone didn't get the memo about Reeves being missing, or they were convinced the person on the other end was who they were claiming to be. The man purporting to be Reeves had told Donnelly that he had found another job and that he had informed his parents of his new whereabouts. And with those assurances, they decided to mail the check. On day 21, someone who claimed to be Reeves called up the Exxon in Elwin Park. The man tried to sell Reeves' car to the shop to cover the cost of the repair bill, but they weren't interested. The man said that he had originally bought the car for $1,200, but in reality, the Volkswagen Bug had been a gift to Reeves from his father, Kemp. At this point, the cops and Reeves' parents had no knowledge of these many purchases and the repairs to his vehicle. The best lead that they had was the check being sent from his employer. So Barbara asked the Kittery Police Department if they could keep a watch at the post office. They said that they unfortunately didn't have the resources to do so, but a lack of manpower didn't stop Barbara and Kemp Johnson. They instead asked if they could step in and assist, and were granted permission to stake out the Kittery post office themselves, hoping to encounter their son. In speaking with employees at the post office, they learned that Reeves' P.O. box had been cleared out on day 14 or 15, about a week earlier. Barbara and Kemp spent 2 days waiting, rotating shifts from the lobby to the car, pretending to be tourists in the winter, inside the post office of an empty seasonal summer town. Their story might have been a little thin. They showed up as soon as they unlocked the front doors and stayed all day, waiting for somebody to show up and get the check from Donnelly Manufacturing that sat amongst junk mail inside post office box 451. Would it be Reeves? Barbara prepared herself, practicing inside her head for the moment she would confront her son over the worried pit that took up residence in her stomach. Where have you been the past 3 weeks? On the afternoon of Thursday, February 24th, 1983, day 22, somebody did show up to open box 451. Somebody who had a key. Only it wasn't Reeves. The man was young, maybe 20s or early 30s. White, about 5'10", with longer reddish-brown hair and a beard. He wore dark green coveralls, a short-brimmed red baseball cap with a white logo, and he had the key to Reeves' mailbox. The man opened Reeves' P.O. box and pulled out the mail, opening, reading, and tossing out everything except for the check from Donnelly. Barbara snapped a photo of the man on her tourist camera. This was it. This was the moment she would finally have the answer to where her son was. Petite Barbara confronted the man, demanding to know where Reeves was and why he had a mailbox key. The man replied, "He's in an apartment in Portsmouth, I'll take you to him if you have a car. She followed the man out of the post office, but as soon as they got out the door, he took off, running on foot. Barbara and Kemp never caught up with him. As luck would have it, Kemp was away at that moment, and it was Barbara alone who had to deal with the situation. They developed the film right away. Everyone will see this photo and know your face. Somebody will know who you are. When she flipped to the photos in the post office, her heart sank. The photo of the man, the only photo that she had taken of the man stealing her son's mail at the post office, was a photo of his hand covering the exact spot where his face should be. He had foiled her attempt and successfully eluded being captured on film.
She must have thought she had his picture. That was probably her deepest hope, that she had that, and how heartbreaking it must have been when she got the pictures developed and the man's hand is perfectly placed in a place so you can't see his face. 5 seconds either way and you might have got his face. It's bothered me ever since, plus the fact that we never released that picture because we didn't have it. I had never seen that picture before I met with Reeves' brother and sister, and they provided that picture. I put it out. I mean, it's just so late in the game to put a picture like that out.
Reeves' final check was never cashed, and it was eventually canceled by Donnelly. That chance encounter, Barbara's face-to-face meeting with the man who probably knew what happened to her son, was the only encounter she would ever have.
When they were coming up here to Kittery, I said, "Can I come up and help?" And they said, no, we've got that. And I keep wondering, what if that guy at the post office, if I had been there and I could have chased him? What if?
This encounter at the post office on day 22 was the final known action taken by Reeves or whoever was impersonating him. There were no more purchases. There were no more sightings. The car was abandoned. Sometime around Friday, February 25th, Reeves' landlord, Charlie Bold, and his daughter spotted Reeves' red Beetle at the Exxon in Elwyn Park. Up until this point, no one had known where Reeves' car was at. Kemp went to the Exxon station, paid the bill, and took the car to Kittery PD, turning it over to them and giving them permission to give it to Reeves if he appeared and presented proper identification. Inside the car, he found brochures for Canon and Minolta cameras and for Radio Shack. That same day, Ocean National Bank closed Reeves' account. It was overdrawn by $226 in today's money, and the checks from the purchases made at Daymart, Radio Shack, and the second round of groceries at Shaw's had bounced. And that was it. 3 weeks after his final shift at Donnelly, Reeves Johnson was gone.
Right away, I knew something was very wrong. Knowing Reeves was not somebody who's going to do something like this, he's not going to disappear, didn't have the resources. He is not somebody to get involved with dangerous people. It just left me completely at a loss as to what could have happened.
My name is Kristen Seavey, and you've been listening to a clip from my show, Murder, She Told. If you liked what you heard, there's over 100 episodes just like it waiting for you. And if you're intrigued about this case, you can listen to the full episode right now on Murder, She Told. It's called Reeves Johnson Inside the Investigation. And this one is a special one because I work directly with the police department on this. So not only will you get the full story, you'll get a peek behind the scenes of what it's like investigating a cold case. So click those links in the show notes and go check out Murder, She Told. Thank you for listening.